Welcome to episode 131 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, we look back at the Western Bulldogs AFL Premiership win with Nick Trulson.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who uses hashtags in emails and texts, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I still use hashtags in emails and texts and messages. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. You're doing so either on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or my favourite Pocket Casts. It's my favourite podcast app. And it has been for a long while. I don't see myself changing. And it was good to see Kevin Rose mentioned in a recent newsletter of his that he has converted to Pocket Cast. Please let me know what you're listening to this podcast on, and also what other podcasts you're listening to. Send me a tweet at Sean Callanan, or send me an email, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com. Really looking forward to a conversation with Nick. The Western Bulldogs are the AFL Premiers. They won the AFL Premiership recently. And to set it up, the Western Bulldogs have, and it's not really a new story, have long had have not won for a very long time, 1954, I believe. So a long drought. And they went into the AFL finals in the sixth position of an 8-team playoff. So not expected to, a young talented team, but not expected to win. Normally the winner comes from the top four. And so I talked to Nick a little bit about the experience behind the scenes at the Bulldogs. We did make a mistake. Nick was on way back on episode 5, not episode 6, as we say in the interview. So if you want to go back and listen to Nick's first couple of months at the Western Bulldogs, you can go all the way back to episode 5, sportsgeekhq.com/5. You can put the number in front of most podcasts and get them in there. If I haven't done that, please let me know. But before we get into the interview, please let me take this time to mention the sponsor of this episode. Ever have trouble understanding how to connect with your fans? Want to know how to drive more value for your sponsors? Want to make sure that you are getting cheeks on the seats? Sorry, there's not an app for that. There's no app that can do that. You need SportsGeek. Simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/help. Enter your details and mention my name, Sean, that's S-E-A-N, and I'll call you to discuss your sports marketing goals. No obligations. Happy to have a chat. Always happy to help my podcast listeners. So simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/help and mention my name, Sean, S-E-A-N. Now, let's get on to our interview with Nick Trulson from the Western Bulldogs. Very happy to be here, home of the 2016 AFL Premiers, with Nick Trulson, Chief Commercial Officer for the Western Bulldogs. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah, you were holding out. You were just saying, no, I'm not coming back on the podcast until I've got some silverware. Must have been a whirlwind last 2 months, really.
It's been really surreal. Still pinching myself that it's actually happened. It's been an unbelievable 8 weeks to think that we finished seventh at the end of the home and away season, and then to actually be able to go through four unbelievable finals, and just the momentum that we're able to build and the national profile that we're able to drive. And I think that's been the most exciting thing, that we've uncovered a lot of new fans that we probably didn't think we knew. And the fact that we were playing an exciting brand of football, it really then sets us up moving forward for an exciting period, hopefully on field, but also off field, great opportunity to take our fan-centric approach further as well.
So for the people who have been listening to the podcast for a while, way back when in episode 6, when I was doing most of the interviews on ABC Grandstand with Francis, I think I gave you a call, said, oh, I've had someone cancelled, and you're in the digital green room, so to speak, and you spoke about some of the plans, and you were still new to the Bulldogs end. So previously you were with Essendon in a fan development role and came across the Bulldogs. take us back to, again, that point and some of the goals that you had around the Bulldogs back then and sort of where it sits now.
Well, it was such an interesting time. I left Essendon on the eve of the 2011 season, started the Bulldogs, and we actually played the Bombers in the first game of that year, and the Bombers won by 10 goals, so it wasn't a great start. We were actually premiership favourites at the start of 2011 after three preliminary finals in a row, so I thought I'd come on at the right time. But unfortunately, we then sort of went downhill from there on field to a point where probably 2012, 13 and 14, we were in the bottom four. And I think for us as a club, a lot of the things that really drove me to want to come across was the opportunity we had in the west of Melbourne, 20,000 people moving into the region each year for the next decade. Wonderful opportunity for us to engage with, you know, the fastest growth corridor in the whole of Australia. We do amazing community programs, and that was something I was pretty keen to get involved in. And as part of it, we've been able to drive things like our Sons of the West Men's Health program. So coming up with being the community club of the AFL, not having a great on-field success, it was really about how do we make sure that we're doing all those fan engagement things right. Our digital platforms weren't in a great way when I started in 2011, and that was, you know, getting, you know, really key people like Tom Nixon on board. Those sort of people have been really able to help us drive that fan-centric approach. And we knew that one day it was going to turn. It's taken a little bit longer than we would have liked, but, you know, we had a real focus as a club, going to the draft, getting the best available talent. And then we probably got there a bit quicker than we thought. And it's, you know, to be at 2016 as the AFL Premiers, it's still sinking in. But just wonderful to see. You know, one of the highlights for me was probably seeing all the older fans who have, you know, waited a long time, 62 years since we last won in 54. To see a lot of tears after the game across that was pretty special. And we've just been inundated since then. And, yeah, happy to talk to you more about that as well.
So, and yeah, that was really a big part of, you know, our discussion in the episode six, was that you really had that fan focus and that community focus, and geographically had a real focus of the west of Melbourne, and engaging both fans that potentially may have lapsed or in the region, but then also going out and trying to identify new fans and develop that, whether it be in schools or particular parts of the community. So it was a real, and it was really not focused about the on-field product, and it wasn't because the on-field product wasn't working, but you have to have that level playing field of, we're going to be consistent and this is our message. And so that community feel for the Bulldogs was the big driver to bring fans in.
Yeah, definitely. And being in the most diverse region in the whole of Australia as well, with a lot of newly arrived immigrants, we're really proud of the immigration programs with our settlement grants programs that we run. And we knew it was going to be a slow burn. The one bad thing of also being down in the bottom four for a number of years is that, of course, then your TV broadcast isn't anywhere near where you would like. We had 4 years where we didn't have Friday night football. So being able to attract a new fan, especially who watches TV when they've probably been watching, say, the Hawks over that period of time with the caliber of players that they had, I think the exciting turn for us is that we got back on Friday night football this year. We're playing in Ballarat next year, so our west of Melbourne strategy becomes also west of Victoria now. We're really excited to have a five-year agreement to play games in there from next year. So the opportunity of being able to take a premiership team down to Ballarat next year is really exciting. Great for the community down there. We're already doing a lot of our community programs in the Ballarat region. Now being able to take a game there late next season, and they'll be announced tomorrow with the fixture, we're pretty excited about. But we're also playing a home game in Cairns next year, which just got announced. So it's great that we're able to take our brand nationally. And I think for the first time, you know, when we look at this year's TV audiences we just got through, we had 23 million TV viewers for the season, which was number one in the AFL. Usually last year we were at 10 million, for example, and 13th on that ladder. So it's a whole, you know, new game changer for us, and something we're really excited to take our brand both locally with our West of Victoria strategy, but also nationally as well.
And so sort of giving people who aren't in Australia, and, you know, whether they'll be listening in the UK or in the US, coming into this season, you know, a young, up-and-coming list, playing exciting brand of football, you go into the finals in seventh position for an eight-team playoff system for people who don't know, and then you do go on this remarkable run of, you know, four elimination, do-or-die finals, you lose and you're out. You win them interstate, you know, it was all against the odds. Take us through both sort of the back of house, and I had this similar conversation with the guys, with Kenny Lauer and the guys at the Warriors, as they were planning that initial run in 2015, in how are you going around the planning, what's happening behind the scenes, at the same time, you've got a football department focused on a goal. What's happening in the, you know, the marketing department and what you're trying to do commercially with your partners, and also from a fan engagement point of view, to not get ahead of yourself, but keep that momentum, the momentum going.
It's been an amazing journey in that side of things, and I must say kudos to some of the other teams who have been there, like the Hawks, who, you know, were really helpful in that particular time. That it was all new for us, but we did know leading into the finals that we had to plan out to, with the best case scenario, that we would go all the way. And by being planned like that, we were able to make sure we hit each week, and each week got bigger and bigger. We learned an enormous amount along the way. I mean, it's even 10 weeks ago, you get the premiership gear sent to you from the AFL merchandise licensees, and, you know, you sort of dream, wouldn't it be great that we're going to have that problem of having to have that order. So putting that order in place, it gets you excited because you know you're part of the finals. But going to the West with six changes into the first final, you know, real rank underdogs, to win over there, I think it then really dawned on everyone here that, geez, we've got an opportunity that we might go a fair way into this final series. So after each final, we made sure we had, you know, teleconferences, enormous amount of hours put in. And that's probably been one of the most exciting things is, and proud things, is the amount of work the staff put in. Knowing as we kept moving forward, playing the Hawks in front of 88,000 in the second final, the three-time reigning premiers, to beat them on their home ground in front of 88,000, also just gave us, you know, a lot of belief. And there was really that motto in the football department. We made sure we left them alone. We did all our planning on the other side, only really let them know things when we needed to, just so they could focus on what they needed to do. But even the mantra was put across of, you know, why not us? You know, Marcus Bottompelli, you know, again, young player, was, you know, did that in the media a bit. And I think that really started to gather momentum. Then to go to GWS underdogs in the preliminary final and beat them by a goal, and it's probably one of the greatest games I've ever been to. I took my family up. The sheer emotion after the game of knowing that for the first time in over 50 years we'd made a grand final, let alone win one, was pretty overwhelming. And I think there was that sense that, you know, we'd love the Bulldogs to win, but geez, have they played their grand final a week early? And then just the huge amount of time we spent the week of the grand final, you know, having 12,000 fans out here for an open training session, to then have the grand final parade, which was a record 200,000 people turned out. I think it really dawned on people that there was something special brewing. And then to play one of the great grand finals of the last decade, I think that even though we didn't find it that way during the game, it wasn't until Liam Pickens' goal, you know, the 27th minute mark, that I was able to relax a bit and really try and soak it in. But it was a pretty special moment. And then the next day, of course, we were back here at 7:30 in the morning for our family day. We had 25,000 people here, which was, our captain, Bob Murphy, called it, it looks like Woodstock when he looked out over. Well, you couldn't see a blade of grass, but we did $300,000 or $400,000 worth of merchandise on that particular day. So we were able to do that well, but then we were able to soak it up, and we had, you know, 4 or 5 hours with the players and just the staff and the players, and it was a great way to sort of reflect on just an amazing 4 or 5 weeks that we just had.
It's really important, especially on those big days. And, you know, been lucky enough to work with a few teams that are going into those big days, and there's so much noise. There's so many more, you know, broadcasters, participants in there. And so from a team point of view, you just really want to focus on, let's just worry about our fans, because, you know, you've got your TV operators reporting, you've got your radio, everyone else is reporting on it. And it's a really opportunity just to cut through the noise and talk to your fans. But then also from a digital department and the people working behind the scenes, you're all working so hard. You've occasionally, you know, and I always just say, do all the work, but occasionally just wait and enjoy it, because they don't come along that often. You want to be able to take some of it in personally, because it's, you know, it's part of the reason why people want to work in sport, to be able to be part of those moments. Did you find yourself in a few times over that week going, just taking a breath, pinching yourself, and just realizing where you were?
Yeah, no doubt. I think, even the open training session here with 12,000, we encourage all staff to watch that from our balcony, looking out over, and just seeing the smiles of our staff of just, we just couldn't believe that we were pinching ourselves, thinking we're in this particular week. The roar when the players came out was unforgettable. And I think that's where digital's played a huge part, in the fact of that you can capture these amazing moments. And I made the point of going up to our level 3 balcony the day after the grand final, when there was 25,000 here, and did a short 15-second, 20-second video, which I then gave to our social media team. and they put it on Facebook and had a million views in 24 hours. And, you know, usually that's unprecedented for us. And I think that's what the exciting thing that we're able to see is that we've captured the imagination of the nation in the last 6 weeks, and everyone wanted to soak up a lot about what we were able to achieve. And for the very first time for the month of September, we were number one in unique users coming to the website, page impressions, video views, time on site. Usually we're in the teens. So it showed it was just an enormous change there. And also too, our digital team did an amazing job just capturing those special moments of the fans. And we've also been really lucky that we've had a documentary called The Ride. A guy called Adrian Brown from Channel 7 has followed the team since Luke Beveridge became coach 2 years ago. So we've also got this unbelievable opportunity from a documentary point of view that, you know, for the first time in 62 years, and you talked about your US listeners in UK. I mean, you know, you look at Leicester, what Leicester did this year, and then you think about what the Cavs, who hadn't won with over 50 years, you know, we're really excited that we're sort of part of that journey as well. And you know, you look at the Indians or the Cubs are going to do the similar thing. So it's been that year of the underdog. And for us to be part of it, it's pretty special.
Yeah, definitely. And you're talking before about, you know, some of those numbers. Your job, you know, Chief Commercial Officer, is to start now taking some of those numbers, converting those numbers, taking that that glow of both new fans and, you know, the love of the Bulldogs, where, you know, everyone's second team in the grand final. What does that mean from a, you know, from a sponsor and a brand point of view? How have those discussions gone in the last couple of weeks, and you know, what are you looking to do, you know, going forward and sort of leverage this success going forward?
It's a fantastic point, and you know, I've sort of been we've received a lot of incoming calls from potential partners, which is really exciting. And I think we've really set the mark in here that we want to make sure the humility is a real key theme for us. We are still the community club of the AFL is a mantra. What we have to be mindful of is, yes, our numbers have changed a lot. I mean, to go from 13th in TV audiences to number one in the AFL, that means we're giving great value for our partners. But we also feel like we can now give more of, you know, we're a traditional blue-collar brand out in the west of Melbourne, but we also now see we can actually be more of a national brand and attract, you know, we've actually got some very recognisable marquee players now. So 4 years ago, we probably couldn't have said that. So we have to really work our way through that. Membership, they can't keep up with the number of calls that we're getting each day. Merchandise has been a whole change for us. But I think we're actually now starting to attract brands who traditionally might not have partnered with us. And I think important for us, we've got to make sure that we stay true to who we are and the values that we have. And we have brands who will be part of that journey with us.
Yeah, it's very much a matter of, you know, matching it up with your brand, you know, because you don't want to have that disconnect, but then also that it fits for, you know, your fan. You know, you can't just be, you know, a bandwagon brand, so to speak, and say, oh, we're going to jump on you, because it has to match the values of what you've got as a club, but then also that it's going to be of value to the fans. Because if you don't get that, if you don't tick those two boxes, then it, you know, it is just the old slapping a brand on and hoping for the best.
And I think that's where, you know, brands have become so much more focused on making sure their return on investment. The good old days of putting signs and branding on shirts, et cetera, has changed.
Yep.
It's about that fully integrated approach. And I think that's something we've really prided ourselves on. And, you know, things like Sons of the West was a new product for us that we're able to take to market. Most importantly, it's making a huge change to the community. We've had 4,000 men take part in the program, but we've been able to attract 40 partners to the program.
So take us through, for the people who don't know, take us through what the Sons of the West program is and what it's about.
About 4 years ago, this time 4 years ago, we went across to the UK and played an exhibition game in London against Port Adelaide. And part of that was able to organise meetings with several EPL clubs. And our president, Peter Gordon, said to me that he'd heard that Liverpool Football Club had done a fantastic men's health program. So we specifically went and visited them to find out as much about it as we could. And as part of that, we were able to work with them for about 18 months. And then we actually launched our own version. And now it's sort of like a 16 to 24 week program where we have men from the west of Melbourne and now the west of Victoria, with Ballarat having taken part in it this year, where they get the chance to learn all about areas of health. So your traditional ones around physical activity, healthy eating, etc. But most importantly now, with things like mental health being such a huge issue in our community, we're able to get experts like Beyond Blue, Heart Foundation, etc. to come in and give these men tools that they can become healthier. And I think that's been the amazing thing, is that it's a fully integrated program across most of the year. Social cohesion has been a huge part of it. These men have now formed amazing friendships, where a lot of them, especially if they're shift workers, don't have time for friendships, probably aren't eating the right food. So to be able to educate them in that way and have former players on board like Dougie Hawkins, who are legends of the club, to be ambassadors for it, but also being able to tap into someone like Shane D'Elia, who's ambassador for the club, owner of Maha Restaurant, able to come in and do cooking classes for the men, with Tony Liberatore, who's a Brownlow medalist and father of one of our new young guns. I think we've been able to use the digital platforms really well to engage with the men. But most importantly, we're making a healthier community out in the west of Melbourne, and we know a healthier community means a healthier Western Bulldogs. And it's how do we grow that program? We'd love to do a female version of it moving forward, now that we've got a female team in the AFL competition. So, again, it's a good example of thinking about our community, how we can help it, but it's also given us an opportunity to bring a new product to life as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not just here's a program, it's a product, and then that's where the partners fit in. And it's not, like you said, the hey, let's sell more signage around the oval or I'd put a brand on a spot on the big screen. You did talk a little bit there about the club now, even though you have been in the women's football game for a long time, but you know, being one of the licensees for the new women's AFL, how does that change tack for the club overall, or is it just a bit more effort now put into that space?
I think we've had a mantra for the last few years about three teams, one club. So we've got a team in the AFL, we've got a men's team in the VFL, and we've also got a women's team. And I think now being able to bring that to life, it's a super exciting opportunity. Amazingly for us, we won all three cups this year. So we won the AFL Premiership, the VFL Premiership the week before the AFL one, and the women's exhibition game here at the Witten Oval that we played, we won the cup for that as well. So that's pretty exciting for us to go into that. The gender equality side of things is really important, and you know, we've got a really good partnership with White Ribbon out of our men's health program, and you know, we're very focused on things like how do we make sure domestic violence against women stops. I think having a women's brand now as a Western Bulldogs team is going to be amazing for what we can do in the community. The amount of young girls playing the game, you know, they're expecting 500,000 girls will be playing Aussie rules football next year across Australia. So I think that's exciting. But from a commercial point of view, it's also opened up amazingly new doors for us. We've got Priceline, enormous Australian brand on board as our co-major partner with Bob Jane T-Mart. So to get two brands who are really strong in the marketplace, who we're going to be able to work with is super exciting, and who are really strong on driving gender equality issues as well.
Yeah, so again, for the people who don't know, the Women's AFL League launches next year before the AFL proper kicks in. So it'll be interesting to see, one, how it runs. It's sort of running right at a time when the footy fan is starved for footy, so it's going to be really in the right spot for everyone to check it out. With
eight teams
in the first year. The last thing, if you do follow Nick on Twitter at Nick Trulson, you will see Nick with a lot of selfies with celebrities. Is this a big part of the Bulldogs strategy, or is it you just want to be hanging out with the Tim Cahills? Did you meet Thor? I mean, if you didn't see Chris Helmsworth's picture, I think it was after the prelim final, in a Western Bulldogs jumper, yeah. with the guns out. I think it you know, 500,000 likes or something on Instagram. There was a few celebrity fans of the Bulldogs jumping on board and making sure they were there for the grand final.
I think that's a bit of a change for us from our brand point of view as well. And you know, Tim Cahill is a great example, and someone who's fantastic to follow on social media as well. His engagement with the fans has been great. But when he did come to Melbourne as part of Melbourne City, Shane D'Elia, who I mentioned before, is a Melbourne City ambassador as well as a Bulldogs one. And Shane rang me up and said, you know, Tim's keen to get a team.
And for those who are listening, if anyone moves to Melbourne and people find out that you've just moved to Melbourne, the first question every Melbourne will ask is, who's your team? And it's almost like you are shamed into having a team. If you don't have a team, it's a question you're going to keep getting. So it's a real, you know, it was a real opportunity, and lucky enough that Shane was able to connect you.
Yeah, and we took Tim and a few of the other Melbourne City boys as well to our Essendon game late in the season. We took them in the rooms. They met all the players, and I think our players were more excited to see Tim and a few of the other boys, and they got to, you know, catch up. We gave Tim a number 4 Guernsey, knowing that's the number he wears for the Socceroos. And Marcus Bonampelli, being one of our young guns, Marcus was pretty pumped to be able to come over and see him. But the amazing thing then with Tim is that he then got quite excited by the fact he liked the type of brand that we were, a young team who never gave up. And then throughout the final series, you know, Tim was phenomenal in the amount of social media posts that he did, talking about the team. We took him to most of the finals, and that was pretty exciting. I think he caught up with the players post grand final night, so they had a catch up there as well. And the Hemsworth boys of both Chris and Liam and their whole family have been Bulldogs since they were born. So it was, we've been up for 3 years, been trying to get the Hemsworth guys involved with the club. And yeah, my wife still is upset at me. I had the job after the game to take both Chris and Liam and his parents down to the change rooms. And they were sensational. In the change rooms, I think they did 2 or 3 TV interviews each, radio interviews. But they were just like fans like us. They loved being in the change rooms, did a lot of photos with the players and the players' partners, of course. They were all pretty excited to see the guys. But I think that's given us a change. Will Anderson, of course, has been a sensational ambassador for us as well. Yeah, plenty of tears after the game from Will, but I think that was a great thing, is being able to share it with those people who have been Bulldogs forever, and seeing what it meant to them was, you know, one of the most special things to me, but also sharing it with my family. And you know, footy takes up a lot of time, and something we're all really passionate about, and to share it with those sort of people and your staff as well, to see the amount of work staff have done, and to see them, you know, have a premiership that they can say that they're part of in the years to come, and especially a drought breaking one after 62 years is super special.
Yeah, I think I was, you know, I think I was following it both from your digital channels, but also because Will's a fellow podcaster, and listening to him and his passion for the Bulldogs, and, you know, his whole reverse the curse thing that he was effectively claiming it before it was happening, and it was good because you know, like a lot of you're following it through their fans' eyes, you know, his fans' eyes and his fandom, and it was, yeah, it just gave another nuance to the story. Knowing someone, you know, I've got a few mates that are Bulldogs fans, and, you know, they were, you know, 40 years long a Bulldogs fan, and that, you know, the tears were flowing quite easily. But yeah, it was funny listening to Will, as, you know, he wasn't Will comedian or celebrity or podcast, he was just Will Bulldogs fan. And you know, and I was lucky enough to go to that. I went to the TOEFOP live podcast recording like the day after, and yeah, whether we were still drunk or not, he was still very, very happy. So it was very funny. So what are the plans for next year? You know, you're no longer the underdog, you're no longer the challenger. You have the target on the back. How does that change or reframe the way you guys, you know, you've already mentioned the humility, change the way you're going to market it and push out the club next year?
Well, I think we've got so many exciting options to talk about. So playing in Ballarat next year, that's going to be super exciting to be able to take our brand to a whole new market. It widens our reach in the west of Victoria, because such a traditional football heartland, Ballarat, when you've got Warrnambool and Hamilton and all those areas down that way that are traditional football heartlands. There's no doubt we'll have probably more Friday night football to be part of, and I think being able to take our brand on a national scale, and I think that sell point that we can then give to brands to come on board, to show them that, you know, we're the fourth or fifth youngest team in the league. So don't think that you've missed the opportunity of being part of something special, because we still think that there's plenty of opportunities. We've got, you know, to have Luke Beveridge as our senior coach, someone who's, you know, universally loved now. And, you know, we get to see who Luke is each and every day, but I think the public have got to see him a lot more. To have him locked away till, you know, 2020, majority of our young stars are all locked away for the next 4 years or so. I think we've got a great opportunity to really capitalise on that. But as I said, remaining true to who we are as a football club, from the community of the club of the AFL sort of type mantra, but also too, how do we capitalise on that? And as I said, memberships going along, you know, we're well ahead of where we were last year. You know, we expect sponsorship to hit, you know, and hit record levels this year. That should continue to grow. And I think it's the value that we can now give to long-term partners. Like Mission Foods have been our major partner going into their ninth year. They've been part of some ups and downs, and, you know, to see them as part of Grand Final Day was pretty special after all, you know, the commitment they've given to our club over a long period of time.
And they're good problems to have, like, you know, selling out of product, having out wait lists. It becomes a different marketing play because you're now building out a list for, you know, starting the queue to let people in. You know, the way you talk to someone who's, you're trying to get to the stadium to someone who's locked out of the stadium, it's a completely different messaging and, you know, your database and your messaging changes. But we could go on about the Bulldogs, but I want to go to the closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yeah, I'd probably say it was, you know, I was thinking about, you know, some of the great events I've been able to go to over a long period of time. But I do remember, you know, as a 10-year-old, January 85, I got to go to the first game under lights for cricket at the MCG, which was pretty special being part of that with my brothers, with my brother and my stepbrothers. And, yeah, to be at the first game under lights at the MCG and now see, you know, what the Coliseum it is now.
Who were the Aussies playing?
They're playing England. I think Ian Botham, by memory, took one of the great slips catches, and I think Robbie Kerr made 77 for Australia.
I wasn't expecting the full stats, but extra marks for that. You would have been to a fair few different stadiums and ballparks in your role. Do you have a favourite food at a sports event, either that you do regularly or somewhere that's just blown you out of the water?
I think there's some great traditions around the world and, you know, the Dodger Dog, et cetera. You know, those sort of things I've been lucky enough to be part of. But you can't beat a pie with sauce at the footy in the middle of winter. Sometimes the pie can be a bit hot and burn your tongue. But yeah, I think, you know, I even see my son now when we go to the footy with him and, you know, he loves a pie with sauce. It's a great tradition that people have had all the way through.
Yep. The first app that you open up in the morning is what?
Twitter always. But saying that, Instagram's definitely become more of an interest just because a lot more of your general friends, maybe outside of sports biz, are on that and seeing a little bit more about their personalities and things like that. But getting all the sports information, Twitter's always the first to go.
And if you were going to recommend the podcast listeners to follow someone, who should it be and why?
There's probably a fair few there. I think having some great contacts across the US and a lot of the guys that you've spoken to already before, and, you know, Peter Stringer, Jeremy Thumb, Brian Sarabian, our good mate Shane Harmon gives, you know, really good insight for global sports. Jeremy McPeak, Brian Gaynor, I could keep going on there, but you know, locally, I think Tim Cahill does an amazing job, as I said, just the engagement he does with fans, his little videos that he does across all his platforms. Sally Fitzgibbons, I reckon, does an amazing job.
Yeah, Sally does a really good job.
From an athlete's point of view. And, you know, my good mate Shane D'Elia and Will Anderson are always good fun to follow, and Will especially with his podcasts, et cetera, as well. And but I think, as I said, being able to have people like Chris and Liam Hemsworth who have such enormous amount of reach, you know, to have 500,000 likes with nearly every post they did the week of the grand final and after the prelim, that's given us opportunities to get our brand into a different space as well.
Definitely. And if you had to pick a social media platform as in Kevin Durant style, the MVP, and I'm not going to let you list them all like you just did then, you actually have to pick one. And it can be, and this is one where sometimes it stumps people because they could answer it personally, this is my MVP, or they can answer it from a club and brand point of view, this is the platform. So that's the option I'll give you. You can either say, this is the platform that is the killer platform for me, or this is the killer platform for the Bulldogs.
I suppose from a reach point of view, from a club point of view, Facebook still has an amazing amount of reach. And you know, like I said, with the videos that we're able to get around the grand final. But I still think from a purely sports biz that I'm sort of focused more on, Twitter is still the leader in that space.
Very good. And people can follow you how?
At Nick Trulson.
And find you in other places.
On both Instagram and Twitter.
And Instagram and Twitter. And obviously you can find Nick on LinkedIn. Thank you very much for hosting me today at the Western Oval, and look forward to the 2017 season with the Bulldogs.
Thanks very much for having me.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Nick Trulson. Please send Nick a tweet at Nick Trulson. If there's someone, if there is a guest that I know will appreciate the tweets, it is Nick. So please send Nick a tweet to tell him that you have listened. There's every chance that he will send you a Western Bulldog scarf in appreciation. And don't forget to sign up to register your interest for our email service that I discussed with John McCauley in the previous episode. Help you sift through all those vendor pitches. Simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/interested. I've actually set up another handle for that, another URL, which is also sportsgeekhq.com/verified. Go to that page. Just simply put in your details. Tell us your story around how you've handled all the multiple technology pitches you get in your inbox, and we'll see. If we get enough responses from the Sports Geek podcast community, then John and I will kick things off and see what we can develop. If you would like my help, as I said earlier, please send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or you can try our new Sports Geek chat bot. I saw the guys at ChatFuel, I saw the guys at TechCrunch actually, build out a chatbot, and then I, doing my geek thing, I followed it down the rabbit hole to find out how it was built, and so I ended up building one myself. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/chatbot. It's still a work in progress. It takes specific words and kicks off sequences, so it has a little bit of AI to it. If you type in fave, it'll quiz about favorite guests and favorite podcasts. If you put in podcasts, it will give you the last three podcasts. If you just put in a search, it will search for everything else. So there's a few little tricks in there. So give it a go. Tell me what you think. It is the first version of it. I didn't want to finish this pod without talking about and having a bit of a callback to my episode with Ian Padgemon on Vine way back when. Let's go way back to the episode 129. So two episodes ago, I was talking to Ian about Vine and how they're using Vine with the Minnesota Vikings and some of the ways that short video has been used. And we did discuss about the issues that Twitter is having and what they are facing in not being sold and things like that. We didn't discuss Vine actually being shut down. So it was a bit of a shock. It was a bit of a shock to me. I see that Ian has set up a GoFundMe to buy Vine. Best of luck with that, Ian. I don't think Twitter will sell it. I don't think it's in their interests to sell it because it's going to be egg on the face if someone buys it and makes a success of it. But I think my main lessons from this is, one, the innovation and the creativity that Vine brought to the community. People like Ian and Viners and the way that people tackle short video now. I think there's a lot to be attributed to Vine. And I think it also shows that Twitter is finally making some of those big, tough decisions that they've been sitting on their hands for maybe even the last 5 years. They haven't made a lot of tough decisions, both from a product point of view and from a staff point of view. And a few people that have left Twitter in the last couple of weeks due to the shrinking of the staff. So it'll be interesting to see where Twitter goes. I still don't I don't hold high hopes for Twitter the way it is now. My current take on Twitter is that it's going to become the ticker tape of the internet. You know, the little ticker, the stock ticker item that you see on the bottom of financial news shows and things like that. I think that's where Twitter is going to head. Everyone will broadcast their latest stuff. That's where everything will break. I think the production of content from fans and regular people is going to keep dropping, and it'll just become like a really, really fast RSS feed of the news of the world. It's disappointing. That's where I think it's heading. You know, I don't know if these media plays that Twitter is doing is going to change it. But engagement, usage is falling. Growth is not happening. So it's in this really weird space. Love your thoughts. Please join in the conversation on the Sports Biz Slack community. Simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. I'm thinking about doing some weekly Q&A sessions there to sort of rally everybody around. So stay tuned either in the Slack community or on Facebook. I will announce them there, and we might do them as a weekly get together and everyone talk about a specific topic. Lastly, I've figured out one thing. This November, I've decided to crowdfund my mustache. So that's right, I am doing Movember, and so you can donate. Please, there's a page now set up on the Sports Geek page, sportsgeekhq.com/Movember. But I'm also going to take a little bit of a break because I can't grow a mo and do podcasts at the same time. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break for the end of November, queue up some episodes, get a bit of ahead of the game. But I just thought I'd let you know. So please donate to Movember. It's a great cause for men's health. And until next episode, which will be episode 132, in a couple of weeks' time, I knew I forgot one thing. The sounds of the game this week refers back to Luke Beveridge's speech from the AFL Grand Final, where he presents Bob Murphy with the medal. This was one of the most tear-inducing moments of the post-Grand Final, and was obviously discussed in my conversation with Nick, so I thought I would include this from the coverage from Channel 7. My name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Before we go, I'd like to get Bob Murphy up on the stand. This is your time. Deserve it more than anyone.